Thank you, Ann, and good morning. Today, I'm going to talk about lots of good things like dreaming and planning and making change. This is sort of an ongoing series. One of the aspects of the Green Sanctuary program that we're participating in is involving more earth-based spirituality in our Sunday services. And so our pagan group and the worship committee kind of decided that what we do is have a service on each one of the four high holidays of Wicca pagan circle group that we celebrate. And last night we had our Imbolc, it's also known by the name Candlemass, service in our group, and so we're bringing it to y'all this morning in a little bit different form for the Sunday service. And so I'd like to talk first a little bit about the wheel of the year. That's the way pagans conceptualize things in the year, as a wheel. And it's really neatly laid out. You're never more than 6 weeks away from a celebration. The way it starts, we sort of begin like with Yule at the four solar celebrations, that being the longest night and shortest day of the year. And now we're moving into a midpoint, which is Imbolc, which is one of the high holidays, which was actually Friday, but we're celebrating today. Then we'll start with the first day of spring, which is the equinox. And then will be Beltane, which is another holiday. And this year it's going to be really special because it's also going to be EcoFest. We're going to combine that and have kind of a whole church-wide wonderful carnival celebration for that. And then, of course, we have the longest day of the year, which is Litha in the pagan tradition, or Midsummer, as some folks refer to it, where we have lots of celebrations there. And then comes another high holiday that we'll do a service for, which is Lunisod or Lammas. And that's a time midpoint between the height of summer and the fall equinox. So the fall equinox, we're sort of turning back into the dark part of the year. And then we have a high holiday celebration at Samhain or Halloween, which takes us back to Yule. And that, in a nutshell, is the wheel of the year. Imbolc is one that isn't really known, at least by that name, to the wider community. It's a celebration of, well, all four of the high holidays that we celebrate are festivals of fire in one form or another, and each one is different. And the thing that's associated with Imbolc is fire in the form of candles. Looking back on the way the ancients viewed it is quite a bit different than the way it is today. If you kind of take your mind back about 5,000 years, people were struggling to survive. There weren't grocery stores or refrigeration, things like that. So you had to plan the whole year for the dark time of the year, for the winter months. And by about now, it got kind of grim a lot of times because the best laid plans, no matter what, don't always turn out. The food that you carefully tucked away to get you through the winter may have been eaten by rodents if it's grain, or might have spoiled if it was meat, because the only methods that people had back then to preserve the food was either by the sun, drying it out, by fire, smoking the meat or whatever, with salt, or fermentation. So that aspect, this was sort of the beginning of spring in a way. biologically, this is the time of year when the sheep that are, I guess they're like short days maters, where they start making babies when it gets in the fall and the days get shorter. And with their gestation, in bulk was about the time that they started making babies. And that was very important because if the foodstuffs were running out, that would mean there would be fresh milk and cheese that could be added to supplement diet. So in that sense, in bulk is definitely a holiday of hope, of new beginnings, hopefully in early spring. It's also associated with the groundhog. That's one way it continues today to be relevant. It's funny how those ancient traditions can manifest in the present. With any luck at all, the groundhog did not see a shadow yesterday, at least if he didn't come out. Well, if he came out before about 2:30 in the afternoon. Yeah. It was a good one. And in Pennsylvania, the groundhog didn't see a shadow there either. So hopefully that means we'll have an early spring. And that's all sort of nebulous because today's beautiful. But since we have the great good luck to live right on that boundary line between the jet stream going up and down, we're going to ignore the fact that it could be winter again on Thursday. Just take it a day at a time, right? So, the other thing about the way people lived back then was they were all in very close quarters. You know, people lived in extended families, and a lot of times they would even bring the animals in to their home in the wintertime because the only heat they had was like a hearth. And the animals actually produced some body heat, so that was a good thing. Plus, it was easier to take care of them to make sure they didn't get eaten by predators or frozen in the extreme cold. So it got kind of smelly and sanitation became an issue. And then there's the relatives. Yeah. People living in extended families. And by now, things were getting a little tense, possibly, with too much togetherness. So hopefully, as people began to have hope that spring is coming, it kind of helped everybody get through it to the time when things got better and they were able to get out and start. Another aspect of it is the planning. Once again, you know, you kind of have to go with the seasons in an agrarian society. The winter time is a time to regroup. You get to relax, but you also have to fix everything that got broken throughout the year and maybe make some new things in terms of agriculture equipment, plows and harnesses and things like that. So this was a time of creation. And also, for some of us, there is divinity as a part of our lives, and certainly in the pagan culture, there are many deities. And one of the most important and the strongest that has gone from 5,000 years down to the present day is the goddess Bridget. And using the Celtic pronunciation, it's Bríod. So, Imbolc is a celebration of the goddess, Bridget, Bríod, who is a fire goddess. There's the concept of the triple goddess, which most of the time refers to the three aspects of a woman's life as a maiden, as a mother, and as a crone. And that is manifest with Bridget being a triple goddess. But she's also associated with different aspects of agrarian life. She is the goddess of poetry and inspiration. She is also the goddess of the hearth and the forge. And she is the goddess of healing. Healing waters, being a midwife, fertility, and things like that. So she's got a lot going on. She's also been associated with prophecy and many aspects of a woman's life. She definitely is a strong image for women. She is associated with education, especially for women. And once again, with poetry and expression of the arts through language. And she is also accredited in some circles with giving humans written language. So she's really important in that respect. And as people worshipped her back then, she was in charge of protection, protecting the homes and the forges of people from fire. If you stop and think about it, if you're living in a house that's made out of wood with thatch and timber, you gotta wonder when the only source of heat and light that you have is fire. And so there's a strong need for protection. And one way that people symbolized that was they made what they called corn dollies, which is kind of weird because they're usually made out of straw, more like wheat dollies. But they were symbols either in a cross form or as a little doll shape that people would put in their homes as a symbol of protection. And they would invoke the goddess to keep them safe that way. As the Christian church began to come into the British Isles in Scotland, Wales, Ireland, and Western Europe, they used a variety of means to try to convert people to Christianity. And one of the ways that they did that was to try to incorporate. They would take the pagan holidays, and Imbolc became Candlemas, Yule became Christmas, I can think of some others offhand, but the idea was that they would just take what the people already believed and change it to Christian form. So what they did with Brigid, or Briad, was to make her a saint. And she was in charge of midwifery rather than being the strong goddess of the forge and fire and all that sort of thing. She was pretty much into healing, childbirth, things like that. One of the things that the church promoted was that Briad was the midwife to Mary when Jesus was born. Okay. They also reckoned that she created a lot of miracles. She was known for healing lepers, excuse me. Not leopards. People with leprosy. At the sacred springs, and when people came for healing, they would pray to Briad to help them heal. At the sacred waters, that she would protect them and help them heal that way. Some of the things that were kind of code that the pagans held on to was the fact that they associated her with dawn, with fire, and thresholds. So those were all symbols of strength and change to pagans. And so they kind of retained that as a way to kind of ameliorate the effects of the Christian church on the goddess. She was much tamer and much more along the lines that the Christians wanted to promote in terms of roles for women. But yet, the pagans hung on to her in that sense. Some of the tales are... One of the ways that Christians would try to downplay the deities of the people was to make them into myths. You know, they weren't really people. They weren't really gods or goddesses. They weren't all that important. They were just myths. And so they kind of promoted the idea that she was born at dawn in a pillar of fire. And she was in charge of healing and all of those nice womanly things that they wanted her to be. But what that said to the people was a little different. In a way, she's kind of going, hey, I'm still here. I'm still the goddess, even though they want me just to be a saint and, you know, fall into line with the Christian beliefs. So she was still strong, but incognito. And in general, they changed the holiday of Imbolc to Candlemas, Candlemas, depending on how you want to say it. A lot of people conflate the two together, but they're actually separate holidays. Technically, Imbolc should be celebrated on February 1st, but the church uses February 2nd, Candlemas, as the holiday that they want it to be. And they changed it into a lot about candles. And it's something that's kind of stayed with the holiday to this day, that it's all about lots of candles. There was one monastery or cathedral that used like hundreds of candles to celebrate. Pretty impressive. In a way, it's still her strength showing through, but the church had it more about holy purpose, that she was filled with holy purpose, that those holy candles made the devil depart, and they wanted to shift the center of focus away from the goddess to Mary. So it became all about worshiping Mary, and Brigid or Briad was just the saint that was in charge of that. So what does that say to us today? I recognize that a lot of us are not really deists, that don't really believe in gods and goddesses and things like that. And I think there's a lot of significance that comes from this tradition that applies to all of us. The holiday itself and the time of year is about reflection. It's about, where am I going in my life? Am I living the life I want to live? It's a time of reflection. Many pagans and maybe some other folks use tools of divination to sort those things out. And I guess you could look at it in a more psychological sense as it's our higher self, or that best part of us that or connects to the great unconscious, that helps us to sort things out. So it's important to use those things to get perspective on our lives, to have the big picture. And that's one thing that Imbolc does. It's that time of year when we want to reflect, where we want to be able to just dream a little bit. And if we use a tool like that, runes, tarot cards, things like that, it may give us some new input, things to think about that we aren't already tuned into. Like, where have I been? One spread that I use quite a bit is, what has been my focus? Where have I been? And then another card or rune for, where am I today? And these cards and runes have topics. They have characteristics, things like that, that give me that information. Then, of course, the big one is, where am I going in the future? And that's kind of what Imbolc is about. Where am I going? What's this year going to bring me? How am I going to utilize it? And I think it's important to look at that in a spiritual way. That's one of the great gifts of our church, is that we take on social causes and we do things that matter, that are important. But it's not just about the political aspects. It's not just about the social aspects. Those are important. But I think for all of us, the common ground is that we want to do it in a spiritual way. And to involve that spiritual aspect. And that's a gift that Imbolc can give us if we can think about those questions this time of year, whether you're pagan or not, in a spiritual way. You don't have to use divination tools. There's lots of psychological help in terms of finding those answers, looking within ourselves. And one thing that dreaming does this time of year at Imbolc is to help us have hope. We're not that far removed from the folks of the past where for them it was life and death. And for most of us it isn't life and death to get through the winter. But, you know, it helps our mood to have hope, to think about new beginnings and have a positive focus. So that's the aspect of dreaming, I think, that's one that's important. And another aspect of that is to not only look at what am I doing wrong, what's wrong in my life, what do I want to change, and all of our weaknesses and faults, which is kind of where we tend to go when we look at these issues, but to also think about, whoa, what am I doing right? What are my strengths? What are the positive things that I can build on? In some ways, that's easier, but it's funny how we don't always think that way. We think about all the things that we've done wrong, mistakes we have made, and that can be helpful. But what we also need to balance it with is thinking about the positive things, the things that we do right, and how we can capitalize on those. And another aspect of that that applies is observing. Now, the negative form that can take is that little inner voice, oh, why did I say that? Is that person looking at me? Am I okay? Blah, 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 blah. And we all tend to do that. It can be helpful to a point. But when we are so involved in that, we tend to miss a lot about what's actually going on in the world. And that's where if we can observe our interactions with ourselves or with others in a mindful way, where we're able to be open to getting feedback, to looking at things in a little bit different way, it really helps. And that's another aspect of this dreaming process that goes along with Imbolc. Also, getting feedback. We sometimes get feedback we don't necessarily want, like from other drivers on the road or things like that. But if we listen, we can hear feedback that others are trying to give us either consciously or unconsciously. And if we can do that in an open and neutral way to receive it, it can be very helpful to us in terms of figuring out how what we're dreaming about, what we want to change or manifest in that way. So feedback is helpful. Or there's always the simple process of asking people, you know, how does that work for you? Or is this important, especially in close relationships? You know, to kind of make it a time of, we're in this together. Are we doing it the way we want? How can we improve our relationship and things like that? It's a good time of year to do that sort of thing. Does anybody have a bucket list? It's always important maybe to think about those things that before I die I want to do. And to think about how can I incorporate that, to dream about how can I bring that into my life. But that's another thing that dreaming this time of year can help us do. So dreaming, important. But then, what are we going to do with it? it's important to use different tools to plan, and there's just tons of stuff. Go to any bookstore, and there's shelves and shelves of self-help books that tell us how to make change and how to plan and do that type of thing. And that's important. And just to kind of summarize, we want to use the tools that are available to us, like behavior modification things, you know, like reward yourself if you achieve a goal or something that you want to have happen, to try to think small, and to know that we're not in this alone. I think a lot of self-help groups and self-help work is successful because we don't try to do it alone. That we know we need support from others. That's important to get that support, to reach out. So we want to plan. And then just in general, change is always happening. And I've sort of noticed in my life that if I'm willing to take some steps to make change in a gradual way, it goes much better for me. Because life has a way, if you try to resist, it will kind of drop kick us through the goalposts there of life, to use a little bit of a football metaphor, which may be appropriate today if you're into that. And just to kind of quickly summarize, I could talk for a long time. There's a book that I really like, and it's written by a Jewish rabbi who's very much into God. But I think the things that he talks about, his name is Harold Kushner, and you may know his work. He wrote one that's a classic for grief and loss that's called When Bad Things Happen to... Thank you. A little brain fart there. Bad Things Happen to Good People. Maybe you've read it. But he has some other books that I think are even better than that one. That's a good one. But the second book really talks about forgiveness and family relationships. It's called How Good Do I Have to Be? But that's a topic for another day. His third book is called Making a Life Worth Living. And so the question, living a life that matters. I'm sorry, read the wrong thing. So to live a life that matters, that's something that's important to all of us, I think, no matter what our orientation is. And some of the high points that he hits are to find a balance between being good and being important. There's part of us that wants unconditional love, that we're just good because we're here. We don't have to earn love. It's just there. People love us just because we're lovable. And that's great. But the other part of that is we sort of have a need to achieve, to feel like that we're being good, we're doing things that matter. And we want to matter to other people. So it becomes kind of a duel between being good and being important. Sometimes in that process of being important, we find ourselves doing things that don't always go along with our values. And so if we can find a balance between those two things, it really does help us live a life that matters. Another point that he makes is that we need to let conscience win over ego. We sometimes get so focused on what we want to do, and it's just so important to us, that we get tunnel vision, that we forget that there's other things out there. We violate our values and do things that we don't really want to do, or, you know, think, why, you know, later on, why did I do that? And so sometimes losing to our conscience, losing to that little voice, Jiminy Cricket voice that says, don't do that, do the right thing, can be important to having a life that matters. It's not always about winning or achieving a goal. And another important point, you've probably heard the story at some point about the Native American elder that was talking about that fight between good and evil. And he talks about it being a fight between two dogs, the good dog and the bad dog.
Wolves.
Wolves, okay. Harold Kushner refers to dogs, but I agree, wolves are better. And you know the punchline, right? Which dog or which wolf wins? It's the one you feed. And to remember that is really important to living a life that matters. Which dog or wolf do I feed? That helps a lot. And then finally, when all is said and done, the older we get, the things that matter the most to us are relationships. Relationships with our family, with friends, and being a part of a group. And I just really want to stress that I think it's so important that that is what this church and being a Unitarian is all about. That we're part of something that matters, that we have different ideas, we have different beliefs, but we all want to contribute to that unit, to doing things that matter as a group, because we know that we're all stronger together, that we can tolerate each other's beliefs, idiosyncrasies, whatever. That it's the big picture that we got to keep in mind to living a life that matters. And so that is what, in a nutshell, in bulk means to me. The history of it that comes from long ago traditions down to the present. The lighting of candles as a way of manifesting and making prayer. The way we interact with others, the way that most of all we deal with ourselves, in a way that we do dream and plan in order to make change in our lives, in a way that gets us where we go, so we do have a life that matters. And I thank you.